is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud.
I don't think there's any Democrat in the field that can beat Donald Trump in South Carolina. That's just not going to happen. But Bernie Sanders certainly is not going to be able to do so. I mean, to the extent he's polling well now, it's because people like the word equality. I mean, who doesn't like the word equality? But when you peel back what Bernie Sanders really wants, it is not improving the country. It is radically transforming the country. And most people in South Carolina, regardless of their political ideation, don't want to be Venezuela or Nicaragua or the other countries that he has compared favorably to the country he's now running to lead. That's not what we want to be.
Well, you're listening there to former South Carolina Congressman Trey Gowdy. He says Bernie Sanders is not about improving the country. It is radically transforming the country. And of course, we've heard those words before from another president as well. But now, friends, we're talking about socialism. It's hard to really put that in your mindset to believe that we're really talking about a potential presidential candidate as a socialist, but that is where we find ourselves today here. Welcome onto the show here. Dennis Santiago and Jim McKay are here. Dennis, let's start off here about this comment here. I think a lot of what I want to talk about today, beyond this crazy coronavirus business, is about socialism and the fact of how it's taken over people's brains. You hear Trey Gowdy there saying that, well, yeah, this is radically going to transform the country. You think so?
You've got the activists on the very far left of the Democratic Party going for a guy that they think is popular, and it's a big party. But you know what? It's not going to last, because the reality is that the real Democrats don't want to change. Gowdy's right. You know, they like America just the way it is. And that's and that message is becoming louder and louder and louder as the days go on. And you look at everything that's going on, brokered conventions, elections that have all these different people coming in to try to take it away from him. This is the Democratic Party starting to find its own voice, and it's about time.
But, you know, when you hear they say the left, and Jim, when people say the left, the far left or whatever is taking over the party, it kind of gives me pause a little bit, because when you think of Bernie Sanders and you think about a socialist, which is really a communist, and he's running at the top of the ticket here with the Democrats here, it's a little bit more than left, Jim McKay. I mean, this I don't even like the term left. I mean, this is beyond left, is beyond a U-turn, is beyond it's almost like a rotunda, like he got caught on the circular firing squad of some sort. But I don't know. I'm not buying the left. It's a little more than left.
Yeah, he's not even a Democrat, okay?
Exactly.
That's what amazes me, that he is now leading the Democratic Party candidates across the country. I mean, he's passed Biden by a number, almost by double digits in most of the country. Why they tolerate this man as a member of the Democratic Party is beyond belief.
Yeah, now that's a great reminder what you say there, buddy, is that he's not even part of the Democrat Party. You're spot on with that. And, you know, you don't hear that right now anymore. Nobody's really recognizing that. But he's not even officially a Democrat. And yet this is but he's running for the Democrat ticket, which tells you how messed up that party is. Well, let me tell you, Jim, South Carolina, is Joe Biden wins big in South Carolina. And this was his supposed firewall here. But Biden now escapes here with a firewall victory in South Carolina. President Trump sends a tweet out. He says this: sleepy Joe Biden's victory in the South Carolina Democrat primary should be the end of Mini Mike Bloomberg's joke of a campaign. After the worst debate performance in the history of presidential debates, Mini Mike now has Biden split up his very few voters, taken many away. I guess there's some truth to that, really, Jim.
Bloomberg is come and gone. I mean, the guy spent $517 million on advertising, and in 3 days, he's going to realize that it's not tax deductible. he's going to finish third or lower in a lot of those races.
Through Super Tuesday, you're thinking.
Super Tuesday.
Yeah, that's when he's first on the ballot, obviously. He missed all the first few. So you don't think he comes in as number one or two in any of those big races?
No, I don't think so. Because there's when you get into the middle of the country, there's a lot of people say this is a rich New Yorker trying to buy the election at the last minute. We've had enough of those in the past.
Well, even California. I mean, Bernie Sanders is winning big time in California right now over everybody, double up. And there's no way Bloomberg's going to take that. So, Jim, what does that mean for Bloomberg now? Is he done then after Super Tuesday, or does he keep going?
The only saving grace that Bloomberg has, if the Democratic down ticket, the senators, the House representatives, local people, governors, mayors, and so on and so forth, decide they cannot tolerate a socialist as leading, being the top spot on the Democratic ticket, because a lot of people vote straight ticket, and they don't want him. And if they see him up there, they're going to cross over or not vote at all.
Well, that's actually what they're worried about right now. Let's talk about that voting right down the ballot there. Dennis, we're talking about down ballots here now. You see, the problem that Democrat leaders are realizing right now is that Bernie Sanders is at the top of that ticket, per se, that your down ballots are going to be heavily, heavily hit. Now they're talking about, well, not only will they not have any chance of regaining the Senate, but they probably would lose the House, they're thinking, or that's what a lot of predictions are. Nancy Pelosi comes out the other day, Dennis, and she says that she's willing to accept Bernie Sanders at the top of the ticket. Well, at least that's what she says to the reporters. I don't know that behind closed doors you'll hear her admit the same. What do you think's going on, Dennis, behind closed doors with all of these Democrats, with Schumer, Pelosi, and Democrat leaders in regards to Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden?
I think what's going on with regards to Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden is they will take either one in desperation. Wow. Because when Nancy Pelosi made that statement, the thing I heard loud and clear between the lines is, I am so afraid of Michael Bloomberg, I will take anybody.
So you think she's looking for anybody but a Bloomberg? Huh? Why is that? Why do you think that is?
Bloomberg's an egomaniac. I mean, you know.
But Sanders is a communist. What the hell's the difference? An egomaniac, a communist. And Biden is he's DOA. I mean, the guy doesn't have two sentences he can't put together. So how can she be excited about that?
She can't. And her problem is that she's trying to find some way not to lose the House, because that down ballot issue is real.
It is real. Yeah.
The thing about all these top ticket Democrats that are vying for the presidential election is the number of Republican candidates that have come out into these down ballot races is huge.
Right.
And just working the numbers in terms of random selection, it puts so much momentum.
All right, Dennis, take a vote for me right now. Take a quick vote. Who ends up being, and if you had a crystal ball right now, who ends up becoming the Democrat candidate? Do you see it as Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, or on the outshot Bloomberg?
On a brokered convention basis with superdelegates, I think they'll go with Biden because they just can't go any other way.
Yeah, no, that's a good answer. Jim?
Yeah, I think that Pelosi's already conceded the presidency, because in her statement yesterday, she said her responsibility is making sure they maintain the House. She was asked particularly about who should be at the top of the ticket, and she says, that's not my job. I'm going to see that we retain the House.
You know, I seen that. And that was
walking away from it.
Yeah, that was very interesting. You're right, Jim. That brings up a really good point. I think you're probably right. She probably already has conceded that. Well, listen, the one thing here, the other big story we're going to be talking about today a bit later in the program, too, with experts, is about the coronavirus. And, you know, it is obviously one of the big lead stories that people are just pushing to death. Part of the reason is, as many believe, is that it's the next big scandal, if you will, I guess, for a better word here, that they're trying to use to get Trump out of office or to get him tarnished enough that it would impact the electorate. One of the big stories in the last week here has been the stock market, obviously, and everybody knows that if you've got a 401k or any part connected to the stock market. Dennis, we're talking here about, the market crash this week was historic. I mean, never has it fallen so fast, so quick, in such a short period of time. Part of the problem is going to be the supply chains coming from China. What really is going to happen there? Apple has already been out saying their, you know, profits are being cut everywhere. And the economic impact of this virus, based on, as I'll talk about a little bit later, the word fear. It's a four-letter word, fear. And it really is having an impact on investors and this market, huh?
Oh, yes, it is. I mean, the last time we had a precipitous drop in the stock market this fast was at the beginning of the 2008 financial crisis.
That's it.
Where the market also panicked. So the market is in panic because they have no idea what's going to happen to supply chain. You could say, you know, Wall Street tends to overreact to things. And it may bounce back. I mean, the guys on the street are trying to say, well, you know, it's going to find its bottom and then it'll eventually come back. The economists are saying it's going to be a temporary thing. But the fact of the matter is this panic is very real. The panic is even more real in Europe. They have been canceling trade shows over there. So they have their own economic woes that they are looking at. We're looking at supply chain disruptions. And that's just the Wall Street panic. We haven't even begun the Main Street panic yet, okay? You know, the crash buying for supplies has not yet really begun, and that's going to be the first test of whether or not the supply chain can hold, as a lot of goods that people are going to want to get used to come from China.
Yeah. Part of the conversation right now is that there are a lot of people that were thinking they're excited to see this coronavirus and what's happening to the market. You know, Jim, I know this doesn't sound nice, but when you think about it, they've tried everything to remove Trump from office, let's face it. And the last thing was the big Hail Mary of impeachment. I mean, that's about as grave as you can get when you do an impeachment, And yet here they are now. Nothing's been able to remove the president. I think many people are feeling they are applauding this particular opportunity for the stock market drop, the economy drop, and the potential of the coronavirus interrupting the momentum of the economy and this president. Is that far off base, or is there truth to that?
Absolutely. It's there. Throw anything and everything against the wall and see what sticks. So now that you have a coronavirus, you have shutdowns of facilities in China, And I don't know if it's the Wall Street people, but I know it's the Democratic leadership is saying, howdy do, we can get, you know, a recession going here if we really start a panic.
We have a lot more to talk about on this topic here. And we'll jump more into China a little bit later in the program, people, and a whole lot more about this coronavirus. Got some experts on about this here. And I think there's a lot more to the story. And I have to tell you, the evil that's put with this coronavirus, it is a weaponized, it is absolutely a weaponized from China, and it's evil at best, and the people who are dying and lost their lives are the major impact around the globe here. Nobody is really reporting the truth on this virus, is my point. We'll talk a lot more about truth a bit later on this one, I have to tell you here. Well, listen, let me take a quick moment here and tell you here, you're listening again to Dennis Santiago, Jim McKay. Dennis, as you know, is an American strategist, and he focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. Jim McKay, political analyst, commentator with a 30-year background in global technology, telecommunications, and pharmaceuticals. Well, also in the top news here, you see that Trump has nominated Congressman John Ratcliffe for the second time over, actually, for the Director of National Intelligence. Of course, it looks like Ratcliffe is ready this time around. Second time is the charm, maybe, potentially here. And, you know, he still is going to face some stiff opposition here because he's got to be Senate approved. And I don't know if that's going to go easy, Jim. What do you think?
I think he gets through this time. He has a stellar background. He's been on the Intelligence Committee. He's been a prosecutor. He's been involved in numerous activities throughout his career. And he doesn't have any ghosts in his closet.
He's a hell of a resume. He's got, there's no doubt about it. A lot of these guys do, but he's got a big resume. You think he gets through, Dennis?
Yes, I think he does. He has a couple of advantages this this time around. I mean, you know, he does have a stellar resume. And the thing that I think he has is that the country's just kind of tired of the kind of shenanigans they played with guys like Kavanaugh. I mean, we just don't want to put up with it anymore. And that's going to bear on how Congress goes through this.
All right. Well, a couple of other big victories here to speak about here, Ian, that is the Federal Appeals Court ruled Congress cannot not sue to enforce the subpoenas against the executive branch. And this is the story, friends, where, as you know, they were putting a lot of pressure on the executive branch. They were trying to get his attorney, Donald McGahn, you remember, to testify and a whole lot of others. This was a three-judge panel who ruled on this. This was a big victory, Jim.
Yeah, absolutely. Tonight, I guess Schiff and Nadler and Schumer are all crying and, you know, sitting around a table drinking beer and crying, whatever they're doing, because this will go to the Supreme Court, I'm sure. But it just has too much background, and the ruling was basically based on constitutional law, where it basically they're saying the third branch cannot decide these issues. It has to be worked out by other means. So the court cannot interfere in the separation of powers, is what they're saying.
The other one, talking about courts again, the Federal Appeals Court ruled Trump can withhold grants from sanctuary cities, and this was a big, big ruling, I have to tell you. And this impacts Dennis, California a great deal, clearly, because of sanctuary cities, but it impacts a whole lot of other places as well as New York and many other places around the country here, that the administration can withhold these grants from the sanctuary cities. But this is another one that's going to, they're going to keep playing, I think, ping pong with this one. It's a big ruling, though.
It is a huge ruling. For, you know, this is the power of the executive branch that is being challenged in courts. And the fact of the matter is, this is discretionary money. This is not. There's no entitlement here, and the court is rightly basically saying, look, this is the job of the executive branch to do whatever they please with this money at any time. And if you change the presidency, you can change the direction it takes, but that's what you got to do.
Well, the last story here in the top news is Afghanistan. And Dennis, we've been talking about this for the past few weeks, and this is that, and this is a strange story really to me, because we're asking the Taliban to somehow honor the accord that they're signing, when I you just don't see these people as honorable people. They're never of their word. They're calling it a landmark agreement. I have my doubts, quite frankly. And it was signed yesterday on Saturday to end the United States' longest war and to withdraw its troops from Afghanistan within 14 months. If a lot of ifs there. And one other thing I want to tell you, John Bolton came out, and listen to this, Dennis. He says, signing this agreement with the Taliban is an unacceptable risk to Americans' civilian populations. He said, this is an Obama-style deal that sends the wrong signal. Wow. That was Bolton.
Oh, John, such a hawk.
Pretty much.
Okay, so here's what this deal really does. It's not going to end turmoil and killing in Afghanistan. Nobody ever believed that that was what's going to take. What it does is it gets us out of Afghanistan, you know, kind of the same way we got us out of Syria. And I think that's a good thing for us. It's strategically, we're done there. It's time to go. Now, what's going to happen to the Afghans? It's going to be ugly, because this deal was signed with one side of that war. It does, and they're already talking about how they're going to start fighting with each other after we leave. Okay, so they're anticipating this. This is what they do. You know what? It's time to let them just go do it. John Bolton's wrong.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting how he put that out there on Twitter again, which is where politics are done today. It just was a real reflection point of a relationship gone bad so quickly in regards to John Bolton, of course. And of course, everybody was, remember, he was front and center as a national talking point in regards to the whole impeachment fiasco, people. So again, never one to keep their nose out of things when they can put it in there and become a national talk. talking point again, isn't that? And a lot of these people do it for personal prestige, to get that publicity that goes along with it. Clearly, Bolton probably should have kept his opinions to himself at this point. He's not part of the administration, but, you know, this is not the way it works in Washington anymore, sadly. Listen, there is a tremendous amount of news, far more than you can fit into 1 hour, I can tell you that. But the two big stories that I find and the takeaways here today are vitally important. One is the coronavirus. The second is socialism. And I guess the question you want to ask yourself is, which one do you think is more hazardous to our nation? Which one will kill us first, the coronavirus or socialism? Well, friends, I got news for you. It's not the coronavirus. It's socialism. And we'll talk more about that ahead here. We've got a couple of explosive panels coming up here on these topics here, friends. Big thank you here to Dennis Santiago, Jim McKay. A lot of show ahead there. Stay right there, friends, as Viewpoint rolls on.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
What if a new treatment backed by 17,000 scientific articles was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, healthycell.com/sleep.
So I want to start off first and give you a couple of really important facts about this coronavirus that you're hearing so much about here. COVID-19, which is what it's really called here, the infections worldwide, globally, we're talking over 84,000. To put that in comparison now, watch this now. We're talking about just the everyday flu, influenza, okay, I'm talking about here. We're talking about an estimated 1 billion worldwide in the last year we're talking about would have that flu, what you would call the everyday flu, keep in mind, okay? Now, in the United States here, it ranges between 10 and 45 million cases per year of influenza. So in comparison to what you're seeing with COVID-19, you see the numbers. But here's what's really striking about this, people. COVID-19, we've got approximately 2,800 deaths worldwide. The everyday flu, well, that can go from 250,000 to well over 500,000 deaths worldwide. And in the United States, between 12 and 60,000 deaths in a given year in the United States from influenza. So then you begin to ask, wow, yet you don't hear anything about the flu, do you? But you hear plenty about COVID-19. And then you have to question, why? What's really going on here? I mean, is it that much of a problem? And where does this thing come from? Another interesting point I want to give you, the mortality rate. Listen to this. MERS, 35% mortality. SARS, 10%. Ebola, 50%. COVID-19, which we just talked about, under 3%. I'm going to bring in some experts here as we go here. And I want to start first with Dr. Jay Lair. We'll bring on first. Now, Dr. Jay, you've heard before on the platform. He's a senior policy analyst with the International Climate Science Coalition, former science director of the Heartland Institute. He's a weekly columnist and a commentator voice here at America Out Loud. And Dr. Lair, I want to start here. Acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney. So he says, and I quote, "The press was covering their hoax of the day because they thought it would bring down the president." And he says, "The reason you're seeing so much attention to coronavirus today is that they think this is going to be the thing that brings down the president. That's what this is all about." Now, that is the acting chief of staff who puts that out there. Some pretty striking words. Jay, what do you say to that as a starting point here?
Well, Malcolm, as we have all heard from the Democratic side, I think it was Rahm Emanuel, former aide to Obama and mayor of Chicago, who is widely quoted as saying, "Never let a crisis go to waste."
That's right.
And these people are desperate to get rid of Mr. Trump, and therefore anything that comes down the line that looks bad, they try to tie it to him. And of course, I've heard them on CNN call it the Trump virus. They are delusional. It isn't going to bring him down. I think the general public is tired of the 100% effort of the Democratic Party to do nothing constructive but just try to bring down Mr. Trump. So they are stirring it up and making it a little worse than it might otherwise be. But as you pointed out, the problem is less medical and more fear. Your statistics were excellent. As you pointed out, the death rate is 3%, much higher with other diseases. We will eventually control it. It may take a year to have a vaccine, though I think there'll be we'll collect antibodies from people who had COVID-19 and recovered, and we'll use those antibodies to help new cases of it. So I'm relatively optimistic in terms of the actual medical and mortality rates, but I'm less optimistic because of the economy, although I think the president is doing a good job trying to calm the fear. And even his director of the Fed, Jerome Powell, who doesn't normally see eye to eye with the president, is already talking about lowering interest rates a few points to help the economy in the face of the loss of the supply chain.
I want to talk about China a moment, and I want to talk about specifically, Joel, evil China. And I say that, and some people will say, well, that's a hell of a setup here.
It's certainly true that the Democrat Party sees this potential, well, it already is a horrible tragedy in many places in the world, sees this as a way to, as Jay said, bring down the president. And they really don't care about the actual pandemic itself. The political party, the Democrats that claim to be the party that cares, they actually don't, except for power. And so this is what they are doing, and very unfortunate, and it also happens to be very dangerous for the United States. They are the party of open borders. I like the Chinese people. I've worked in various parts of the country. They're good people. This virus has been for at least 2 years in the hands of people who, in China, in Wuhan, who work in the field of biological warfare. I think this virus is very similar, not in structure, but in the way it infects people, to pandemic of 1918. And in that pandemic, between 50 and 100 million people were killed by the virus. There are two ways to weaponize something. One is to use a natural virus that's already very dangerous.
Yes.
And the other way is to insert splice genetic material into it, which makes it worse. I don't know what happened there in China, of course.
When you called it a biological warfare weapon, what was their intent? What was China's intent with this?
The virus has been in the hands of people in this laboratory in Wuhan who work with biological weapons. And the woman who was a Chinese national and who was working in the Canadian lab, her field is biological warfare. Whether the virus has been modified isn't known. But even if it hasn't in its natural state, it's very, very infective. The infection level, which is called R0, the reproductive number, how many people it will infect who are not infected already, if a person has it, and how many people will that person infect? And in the case of the 1918 pandemic, the R0 level, meaning zero, R0 level, was 1.8. It means that an infected person will infect 1.8 other people.
Right.
Now, in this case, even from the start, the R0 level was, RO level was 2.2.
Right.
And I've noticed that the RO level now is 2.8, which is almost double that of the pandemic virus.
I think what Malcolm is driving at, do you think the virus got out of the lab intentionally or accidentally?
Oh, accidentally. There's no doubt about it.
Okay, you believe accidentally. Okay, let me get over now and bring in Ilana Friedman into the conversation here, because I'm trying to drill down to China, Ilana, and you have your own information, your own intelligence sources. I'd like you to speak from your vantage point a moment here. I'm talking about China itself, and there's being used, as we use the word, weaponized. What is your take on that? Speaking about, because you're not hearing anything about what we're talking about now in the media whatsoever. You're not hearing it from political circles at all. Ilana, what's the basis of this?
I absolutely agree that this came from the level four, what they call biosafety lab. I would call it a biohazard lab, but nevertheless, that it came from there and that there was an accident in the lab. My best information is that it happened sometime in the second half of November. But that this apparently came from a first-person account, that a vial of some kind or something that was carrying this virus, this material, dropped and broke, and that was how it escaped. My sources are usually pretty good and reliable. So in any case, at some point, this virus got out. The question of why they were working on it in the first place.
That's my question right there.
I'm going to respond to that right now. This laboratory was licensed and inspected by the Chinese government. It didn't have any other kind of international indicia on it. So that already makes it suspect. But it was licensed to study the SARS virus and the Ebola. And the information that I have is that their real task was to weaponize the SARS virus in order to have a weapon of that would be they could use on their enemies or their perceived enemies, which I believe certainly included us. And that this was the purpose of this work that was being done there. And that when this escaped, one of the problems that they had was that while they were working on this, they were not simultaneously working on some sort of a solution. There was no cure. Right. So when it got out, all of a sudden, Wuhan became a death factory.
Became a war zone.
People were dropping dead on the street, and they still are. I just heard yesterday from somebody who got a report from Wuhan that there are bodies piled up on the street that for the last month or so, I understand that there are 74 crematoria in that area, but all of the crematoria in the area started working 24/7 because they could no longer bury the bodies. There were so many of them.
And the smell and the stench from that was incredible, I understand.
And more than that, it is putting sulfur dioxide into the air. And there is a new cloud over China, which does not have anything to do with coal, because the coal production and coal use is down to 30%
right.
Of what was.
So, Ilana, let me qualify something. So you believe this was done from China with the intent to use against their enemies, not their own people, but again, it got out, they didn't have the cure, and then they had a full-blown war zone over there. Is that the summary?
And the war zone, by the way, includes most of the country. There are tens of cities all over the country, which are now in lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
A huge part of the country is in lockdown.
Right.
The industry is almost at a standstill. We have no way of really wrapping our brains around a country that would do this to its own people. And when people are found to be sick with something, they're locked in their homes, or they're carried away to these new so-called hospitals where the beds are so close to.
Joel, do you agree with that assessment, or do you have another take?
Well, as I mentioned, weaponization can mean two things. You take a virus and you modify it so it becomes worse, or you take an existing virus and you plan to use it as a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
That's apparently what happened in China, the latter. This was a virus which was a good candidate for biological warfare.
Right.
And it escaped or was released. And by the way, there were when the laboratory in Wuhan was certified in 2017, there were Americans, experts, who wrote reports about this. And they said they felt the laboratory should not be certified and that it had very significant security flaws, and that virus, that pathogens could escape.
The fact that this has happened now, and back to everything we've said, don't you hold China any kind of accountable for this, Joel?
Biological warfare is not good. And
well, no, it's evil. Let's call it what it is. It's evil.
Malcolm, let me just jump in here and refine it. From what Joel and Ilana have told us, there isn't any question this was an accident that happened to people whose ultimate long-range intention was evil on their enemies. But what it has shown the world is they have been unable to handle this horrible medical emergency,
mm-hmm.
and the outcome of it, there cannot be really a silver lining in the deaths of thousands and thousands of people, but this is going to set China back at least a decade in the eyes of the world that they were rising up, and it's going to set back their economy a decade, and it's probably going to take them a couple of years before they're able to staunch the tragedy that's going on in their nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe China was, their intent was very evil here, and I have to call it what it is. You agree with that assessment or not?
Well, I think, as Joel pointed out, I have also worked in China. The people are wonderful.
I'm not talking about the people. You guys are totally off the page here. I'm not talking about the people of China. I'm talking about the leadership of China.
The leadership of China, Malcolm, are evil. Certainly in the eyes.
Amen.
They want to take us over. They want to destroy us economically in every possible way.
Okay. It never is the people specifically. It is about always the leadership. And I don't care what country you talk about or what dictatorship or what communist regime or socialist regime, or it is always the leadership and those dictators and those evil people. The weaponization of it for warfare is criminal. And nobody is saying that. So you're talking about, you know, these are three intellects and three brilliant minds. And I say that proudly because, again, they could light up any room with knowledge and information and thoughts. And they study this stuff. It's what they do for a living here. And I want to tell you a little bit more about them as well. I told you about Dr. Jay Lair. Let me tell you about Dr. Joel S. Holmes as well. He's an engineer. He is, again, an intelligence agent. He helped U.S. companies protect their technologies from industrial espionage, if you will. His experience in epidemic mitigation and control during the SARS epidemic. You remember now that was back in 2002, 2003. He was paramount in that right there. He's got a new book out. It's in our bookstore, China Virus, Corona Pandemic, What Countries and Families Can Do. And it's got a lot of great tips and ideas in there. So visit the America Out Loud bookstore. The link is on the nav bar at americaoutloud.com, as always, friends. and take a look at his book, and Ilana's got books in there, and all of our experts have great information in there and expertise. And by the way, Dr. Joel Holmes is a new contributor and writer for the platform as well. You'll see his new column and article on the platform also. Ilana Friedman, again, you hear her voice. She's a veteran intelligence analyst. Ilana trained in Israel. She spent a lot of years living in Israel. She's certainly a commentator here and a host of the Friedman Report. Strong voice, an intellect with great experience, but also great contacts, great information. So these people deal with real information we're talking about here, and that's important to address that. Now, our goal is to make a difference. Let's continue on here now. And what I want to do is I want to take a shift a little bit and talk about socialism in just a moment here. But before I do here and we start to talk about this, you know, it's interesting, people. What's going on in the media right now, which is really culprit and evidence 101, I would say, the lying, the distortion by politicians and by media puppets, that are all in sync, by the way, to push a narrative of what they want to push out there. Let me give you a couple examples here. One NBC headline says, Trump's coronavirus response highlights why his White House is always in disarray. Now, isn't that sweet, right? Now, it depends, again, what sort of the political aisle you fall on, but the fact that they put out there that his White House is always in disarray, certainly one of the most successful administrations in the history of our lifetime in previous administrations, and yet that's a headline you'd read on NBC News. We know where they stand, right? Their counterparts here, or their sister organization, I should say, CNBC. Listen to this now. It's a classic example here. Trump says the coronavirus is the Democrats' new hoax. That's the headline. Trump says the now when you listen, think about how sick that headline is. Trump says the coronavirus is the Democrats' new hoax. When you read a headline that like that, it kind of indicates to us that Trump is calling the corona like it doesn't exist, like coronavirus is just a hoax made up by the Democrats and it really doesn't exist, which of course goes in the face of all of this, including the press conference he had here just a few days ago, clearly. But then when you read the actual article, that's not at all what he says, clearly. But you see how they tweak that headline so that you get juiced, especially if you hate Trump, you know? And so it's not at all what's happening here. Trump, as you read the article, Trump says that Democrats are using the coronavirus as a hoax to damage him and his administration. The Democrats are politicizing the coronavirus. Now, let's turn it from there to, again, I want to bridge that gap to socialism as we bring our esteemed group back on here. Dr. Joel Holmes joins us back. Dr. Jay Lehrer is here. And the Ilana Friedman are all back with us here as we continue on with the conversation. You hear the setup of what I talk about here. Ilana, let me go to you first on this. And I have to tell you, I mean, you'd have to have an IQ pretty low not to see what's going on here with the media and what I just put out there with these headlines, how they're not only tilting the headlines. I mean, my God, Ilana, you would almost say they've weaponized the headlines, since that seems to be my favorite word today. They're using that to put out there to push their own narrative. I mean, you got to remember, the president came back and he said they went from Russia, Russia, Russia. They went now to the impeachment hoax. And now, of course, they're on coronavirus. But this looks like a last-ditch effort in an election year, potentially, Ilana, to push a narrative out there to blame this coronavirus, this that was made from the evil China leadership, onto the American people. And a lot of people are aghast right now and wondering that there's more to this, far more than a conspiracy of any kind, but that the globalists are aligning to pull down this administration. Now, Ilana, that's a big statement I say there. What would you say to that, please?
I would agree with you. I think that your words are absolutely correct. The people on the left have been weaponizing the news outlets so that these headlines and the stories that follow them are all weaponized in order to bring down the president. I don't think there's any question about that. So I would agree with that, and I would actually, you know, go a little bit further and say that what they are doing is really hurting the country, because it's changing the narrative from the threat that we have and are facing with a very slowly but surely growing number of people who are afflicted by this disease. And what they are doing is diverting, deflecting the seriousness of this situation to make it something political. And I think that's very dangerous for America.
Well, it's very dangerous, but if you're losing the race, Ilana, and you don't have really top candidates in the next election, and I want to get over to you, Dr. J. Lair, now, and you have an administration who's changing the spine of the nation through the judges and bringing more, judges that I would suggest to you are more in line with the framers that bring us back to a constitutionalist, a conservative nation, and a God-loving nation where we came from. And I think they're horrified by that. But Jay, let me tell you this here. When you talk about how complicit is the media, listen to this. 94%, get a load of this, people. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. The facts are 94% of all print and these cable news commentary programs that everybody are eating up like you know what are against the president and his administration and his family. So then you ask, Jay, is this a conspiracy or is this a failure of the free press?
No, it's really a fact. And unfortunately, or fortunately, you describe precisely why they will fail miserably. Because the IQ of the American public is not low enough to be buying these things one after the other after the other. They are fed up. They are well aware that the American press is simply a part of the liberal socialist Democratic Party. And what they're doing now is just running off water like a duck. And I am predicting there is zero chance of any of those stooges in the Democratic debates. And when I watch them, it takes me back to my childhood when I watched movies of the Three Stooges, Moe and Larry and Curly. There are just six or seven of them playing the same comedy that we saw in the movies 50, 60 years ago. And the public has woken up to it. I mean, whoever the Democratic candidate is will get the dyed-in-the-wool liberal votes. Mr. Trump will get every single human being that voted for him the first time, and now the many, many people in the middle that may not be fans of his but have an IQ high enough to know what's going on in the press, the foolishness of socialism presented in the debates, and understanding what Mr. Trump has done for the country. So I could not be more optimistic that socialism will fall on its face, as will all of these Democrats, whoever gets the nomination.
Well, this is part of the reason why a lot of Americans and patriots alike are really, I would say, juiced right now. I mean, they're on overdrive right now, all over the place on social media, trying to turn the tide back. Because when you look at these numbers of socialism, people, it is beyond staggering that we are having a conversation today that you couldn't have guessed this 10 years ago if I said we'd have a conversation on talk radio today with these three experts right now, and we'd be talking about this. You would say I was drinking some sort of Wheaties or be on a conspiracy node here, of course. Of course, I don't know if you drink Wheaties. You probably eat them, but some people could maybe. I don't know. But listen, Jay, back in May of 2019, Gallup poll. Listen to this here now. Let me tell listeners a couple of things here. Here's what's really staggering about this. 43% of Americans said socialism would be a good thing for the country. This is a Gallup poll now. We're talking Gallup, Jay. That was May of 2019. 43, and then you have to scratch your head and you have to say, what the hell? 43%? Who are these people? Who are they? And why would they want a brand? And then you get into the failure of our academia and our institutions, our educational institutions and the media alike, who have pushed a narrative that is so corrupt and so vile and so evil. It's amazing. Back in August of 2018, Gallup had another poll. 47% of Democrats view capitalism positively, but that was down from 56%. Just 2 years before then. So you see the trajectory of the Democrat Party and what's happening. They seem to be believing this socialism or what's happening here, Jay. Why do you think that is?
It's very simple, because we've lost a generation who have come through our government schools that were never taught the horrors of China and Russia and Cuba and Venezuela. I mean, this idiot Bernie Sanders is saying the wonderful things that Castro did in spite of the millions of people that he murdered. And it's because the government schools have never taught the horrors of socialism. So we have a lot of young people that are now out in the public that never knew what was going on. But fortunately, I also know not a large percentage of them will end up in the polls. The same kind of millennials that don't see a problem with socialism aren't going to go out on a rainy day and vote. I am 100% positive that we're going to be celebrating on election day in November, that Mr. Trump will have another 4 years to try to set this country straight.
Listen to this, Joel. I want to get your take on this. New York Magazine says this. Now, listen to this here. Americans have never elected a socialist president, you think? But this year, they might. The Democrat Party's primary front runner is a socialist. And it gets into that the senator from Vermont here, Bernie Sanders, that he has a double-digit lead over the rest of his competitors in the primary. In an all-but-one head-to-head matchup poll, he defeats Donald Trump. Now, they actually believe – see, this is the thing about the polls, how – you talk about – again, Joel, I go back to the word weaponization because it's such a perfect word for today's politics. But you talk about weaponizing polls – if they actually believe that the polls have Bernie Sanders beaten Donald Trump, and if you listen to that with Jay, what he just said, it's pretty staggering, isn't it?
Well, you're right. The polls are, many of them that are affiliated with the Democrat media complex or the Democrat Party in one way or another, they are intended not to reflect the situation, but to control and change the situation to help the Democrat Party. You're absolutely right. The idea that in a head-on political contest between Bernie Sanders and President Trump, that Bernie Sanders would defeat the president is just crazy.
It is laughable. No, you did the right thing there. The laugh and the chuckle and the sarcasm you just put out there is perfect. Perfect, Joel. Joel, let me ask you something. You live in a Scandinavian country. You live abroad right now, and I want to ask you something here. There's a lot of reference points in the media that, oh my God, Denmark and Norway and, Finland and all of that. I mean, these countries are doing magnificent with socialism. And I mentioned that to you on a call one time a couple of weeks back, you and I had, and you kind of laughed in my face and thought we got to do a show or conversation on that one day. Tell listeners right now why that is a misnomer.
Scandinavian countries are not socialist. They are capitalist. They have stock exchanges where you buy shares. Companies are privately owned. They're in the sense of Bernie Sanders is totally ignorant about the way the economy of Scandinavian countries. There's competition. Only thing that they have, which, and by the way, they tax the dickens out of everybody. It's true that the universities are free. However, there are very few people in them. When you graduate from high school in the Scandinavian countries, 95% are eliminated. They couldn't possibly make it into a university. Of the 5% that's left, because of the testing and the grades and everything else, you really have to be at the top of the heap to be considered. Now, that 5% then undergoes more testing and consideration by the universities. And out of that 5%, about 10%, 1 out of 10, actually gets into a university. So there are very few people in universities. It is free. But if we compare it to the United States, where you have huge numbers of people, you can't compare it. There are very few people in universities in Scandinavia.
Ilana Friedman, socialism is such a... a dirty word to certainly a God loving American. It is. It's a dirty, dirty word. It has never succeeded in the history of mankind. And the thing is, socialism is the next step to communism. A lot of people don't understand that as well, because a lot of they sell it as a soft and fuzzy sort of thing. Socialism, we're going to take care of you and your family. We're going to give you everything for nothing. And it's all good. We call it socialism, Ilana. It's all packaged so sweet and soft and cuddly, you know? Yeah, isn't that cool?
You know, Malcolm, this is such a farce and such a stupid approach to what is really a danger to America, because there has never been a socialist country, a truly socialist country, and that includes communism as well, that has been successful, ever. And maybe a few years ago, we might have said that China was an exception to this because its economy was growing so rapidly and so strongly. But look what happened in China because of their approach to socialism. They absolutely have destroyed their own country. There is no socialist country in history that has worked. Why would we, with our very successful, being the strongest economy in the world, the strongest country in the world, why in the world would we ever throw that
out? Well, then when you say that, and I think, well, how did we get here, Ilana? Then what comes to my mind is there is a great amount and level of ignorance out there.
Yeah, Malcolm, I think this goes back to something we have talked about a lot and I've written about a lot, which is that our educational system, particularly not just in universities, which is also pathetic, but
that's right,
but in the government schools, right, where our children are not learning how to think critically, they're not learning the basic things, that they're not learning history, they're not learning geography, they're not learning letters, literature, they're not learning anything except sexual preferences and behaving.
Isn't that the truth?
So, yeah. I mean, it's horrible, and our children are now having grown up through this kind of an education, yeah, are now the millennials who are embracing socialism because they haven't a clue what it is or what it does.
Now, you're 100% right, and they're focused on, you're a boy, you want to be a girl? Oh, no problem. We'll just put you in the shimmit column, the shimmit, you know? And there's a lot of that out there, and it's all over the place. I mean, I'm seeing it every day more and more and more. And that really seems to be the narrative or the agenda of what they're teaching here. You know, on the platform, by the way, I want to mention to you, there is an outstanding series of articles going up right now from our educator, from our teacher and educator, Karen Schoen, who is absolutely brilliant, a brilliant mind. And there's one on the front page you must go read if you haven't. Controlling the education of America's children is a prime goal of socialism. And of course, it starts right off. The goal of socialism is communism. And it's got a very interesting video in this write-up about JFK and about the secret societies that it gets into. And it's a phenomenal read, and it's one I want to encourage you all to go and share and let people know how dangerous this all is. You know, got to remember this, people. We're 243 years into the experiment called the United States of America. Really look at it that way. We will either be the exception in rise to the top, or we will become the rule and America will go down. So what I'm saying is, be a realist, people. Take nothing for granted, absolutely nothing. And you've got to get out, you have to vote, you have to take your country back, you have to get others to do the same, you have to get onto America Out Loud, you need to tell people the gospel truth, you need to share the truth out there. You need to tell people what I call the out loud truth. We all have a part here is what I'm saying. And we all have a contribution here that we need to deliver. And so don't lose sight of that, please, as we move forward here. A tremendous thank you here to all of our guests today. And a big thank you here to Ilana Friedman, Dr. Jay Lair, and Dr. Joel S. Holmes. You'll find a lot more about them, folks, back at the platform, as always, here. A lot happening at America Out Loud. Big year coming up here. Stay close, and we thank you again for being part of the journey here. It's time to get involved and get loud.